Let's get out to the Band of Brothers hotline and bring in our special guest. He's the voice of the Cougars on the Cougar IMG Sports Network. I call him the professional, the Canuck of the Cougars, Greg Wrubell. Greg, how you living?
Ben, I'm well. How are you today?
We're doing great. It's the off season, so we're stretched a little thin on all the things that we would like to be able to talk about. But we were analyzing Bronco Mendenhall's comments. I don't know if you were able to listen to his interview on KUTV, but he talked about something that I think is interesting. He said it jokingly, but he said 1 year as a head coach is equal to like 7 years as like a regular coach. It's like it's like a doggy years, the stress, everything that's on your plate. Have you seen that? I mean, you've been covering the Cougs for a long time. You knew Lavelle very well, and you know Bronco very well. Would you say that that's on point?
Compared to what kind of coaches is he talking about? I didn't see or hear it. He's saying 1 year as a
head coach
of just football or any sport
of a football, being a head coach at BYU. Maybe he didn't get into the specifics of being a head coach specifically at BYU, being that equation, but he just mentioned that it would 1 year as a head coach at BYU for him is equal to 7 years as a regular coach.
Well, you know, I mean, a football coach's average salary is probably about seven times what, you know, most of the other well-to-do people that we know in the world are making. So maybe it all evens out.
More money, more problems.
That's what the man says. You know, take it from Biggie, right?
One of our BYU offensive linemen just got drafted to the CFL, Quinn Lawler. Didn't see a whole lot of playing time for the Cougs, but getting some love in the sixth round. What do you think about that?
Well, the thing about the CFL is because of their roster protocol, you know, they have to have a certain number of Canadian players and a certain number of internationals on their roster. And so, if you are a Canadian player who's played, you know, high level Division I football in the States and you perform well in the offseason combines as Quinn did, you stand a pretty good chance of getting picked in the CFL draft as Quinn did. So, you know, kudos to Quinn against somebody that didn't break the lineup very consistently at BYU, but obviously somebody because of his heritage and his ability and the fact that he showed well in the combines to get picked and so good for him and hopefully he and Cody Hoffman both have good seasons with the Alouettes this year.
Greg, do you think Quinn will have an opportunity to make an impact this year and really get some playing time or maybe just practice roster guy and more of a developmental guy?
I don't know what the Alouettes' depth chart looks like on the offensive line, but I do know, having grown up in Canada and followed the game somewhat since, the offensive line is where you're going to find usually pretty heavy Canadian content. And so if you're a Canadian player who's played some D1 ball in the States, you're going to get a good look there. And again, I don't know depth chart-wise, what kind of veteran strongholds are already in front of him, but when you're a draft pick as Quinn was, as high as he was, top 50, you'd hope to break the roster and have a spot at least for the year to come. But I really don't know enough, Brian, about the Al situation up front.
Greg, in the off season, there tends to be certain articles published and comments and topics that are brought up that aren't brought up during the regular season. And one of those topics is BYU going back to the Mountain West Conference. Tom Homo addressed it, I believe, back in February. Said, it's a possibility. We're not ruling it out, but it's not something that we're necessarily focused on.
I'm not even sure that he, was that heavy about it, calling it a possibility. I think it's not even worth discussing. I can't imagine a scenario in which it would be deemed a viable alternative for BYU.
Yeah, it's as simple as that. I mean, what are the main reasons for that, do you think?
Well, they've been there. They've done that. They moved forward. They moved ahead. They're not going to step back. They're not going to go back to that. It makes no sense whatsoever at this point. The benefits that BYU is experiencing right now as an independent, despite the fact there's not a locked-in best of G5 spot in a New Year's Six Bowl. If that were the be-all and end-all for BYU football or athletics, we might have a different discussion, but it's not. If that were deemed as important as some people think it is, they might still be in that situation, but it's not, and it wasn't for BYU. They're doing better now as an independent, scheduling-wise, monetarily, exposure-wise, than they ever would in the Mountain West Conference. And why they would go back to that, again, to me, it's not even worth discussing.
is being your six-day bull, would that be able to increase their revenue other outside of what they're currently getting?
Well, you'll get a big pay. Any team to get in there gets a big paycheck for that year. But BYU can earn its way in as an independent. They just have to win a lot of games, as they would have to as a G5. And again, you might argue that you can be an 11-2 G5, and you might stand a better chance of getting in than an 11-2 independent BYU. But it really does depend year to year on what other G5s are doing around the country. It's not always going to be the Mountain West Conference team that gets in. And that said, that's not what it's all about. It never, I don't think it ever has been what it's all about for BYU. They're in a better spot now than they were before, and a P5 is better than independence. And that's the simple pecking order. P5 trumps independence, which to me trumps the Mountain West Conference from a BYU standpoint.
Greg, since we're on the P5 and non-P5 and Mountain West, let's go back to the Mountain West days. Me and Ben had, he's smiling at me right now. Me and Ben had a nice little debate about just overall talent, the increase in talent. I say that this team, or that the past few teams, have way more talent than the teams that I've been on, 2009, 2010, and even the teams that Ben has been on. You've covered the team for a while now. Do you see a difference in talent?
Well, it's tough to argue that BYU didn't have among the most talented players ever to play at their positions in players like Austin Colley and Dennis Pitta and Harvey Yunga and John Beck and Max Hall, who were all part of that 2005 to 2010 era, 2009 at least, era for BYU. They've had really good players. They've got really good players now, but those are some of the best ever to play at BYU. So, I would argue that what BYU has, going for it this year and the last few years, has some room to still improve, to make up or to catch up to the level of some of those top players that we're talking about historically. Now, top to bottom, all 22 or all 85, however you want to look at it, I think that you can certainly say that Bronco's talent level is to a point now where he feels he can be consistently competitive with the kinds of schedules he's putting together on an annual basis, and it had to get that way. They had to get to a point where where those 85 scholarships were more completely used on a higher level or higher talented level of player, and I really think they're getting there. I think that's maybe what you're getting at in terms of overall general talent right now, but there have been some pretty special players in the last decade.
Yeah, me and Ben discussed that during break was, when I was playing, it was known that who the starters were, right? You're the starter, you can't get hurt because you're a second string or third string guy, there's no way that they can cut it. So, there was this huge drop off in talent. Now you don't see that. Guys can fall off, and there's not going to be a drop off in talent. There may be a drop off in experience and knowledge of the game, but I definitely think that's where BYU has improved talent wise. But going back to those great players like Austin Colley, do you think that there is the reason why he broke so many records and was as good as he was is because of the quality of opponent?
I think had Austin Colley stayed for his senior season, he would have put some records out of reach at BYU. As it was, he remains to me one of the best all-time receivers ever to play for BYU. And I think it's less about talent level and more about the individual. That's a very special player with an almost incomparable work ethic who wanted to go to BYU, and BYU was the beneficiary of that desire. BYU was fortunate that Austin Colley wanted to play for the Cougars, and that's, again, that's down to Austin. And he could have excelled and did excel against whichever type of player was put across the field from him. That's why he was an NFL draft pick, and that's why he was catching a bunch of touchdowns in the NFL until he had the concussion problems. He is an elite athlete, and again, one of the best ever to play at BYU at that position, and you throw Dennis Pitter right in that same mix at around the same time. Those were elite players, and players who have made NFL paychecks and good paychecks and have played in Super Bowls and all these other kinds of things. It really does come down to that. I mean, football is the consummate team sport, but a special player or two can make a huge difference.
Yeah, and the whole catalyst behind this was we were debating some of the comments coming from that interview with Bronco Mendenhall, and he mentioned that he wasn't so sure that some of these 8-5 teams the last 3 years could have had 11-2 type of seasons in these past schedules from maybe 2005 to 2010 on. What are your thoughts on that? The talent level, these last three, eight and five seasons, do you think that these teams would have been 11-2, 10-3 type of seasons back in 06 to 09?
Tough to say. I would say that, you know, BYU's probably dropped its share of games over these last couple of 8-5 seasons that you'd, you know, like to think they wouldn't be losing otherwise. I mean, you know, at San Jose State, you know, in 2012 comes to mind. Some close games that were against better teams that could have been won. I don't think you necessarily say this, you know, this team could have earned an 11 or a 10-win season in a particular season, because the complexion and the chemistry of the teams can vary from year to year. And again, there have been games that you'd like to think they wouldn't be dropping. You know, so I'm not so sure that more couldn't have been expected already from these groups that went 8-5 the last few seasons. But as we all know, the schedules are getting tougher, generally speaking. Now, there were four P5s on the 2011 schedule, five on the 2012 schedule, eight on the 2013 schedule, then back down to three or four last year. And again, that number is going to hover, I think, between three and six most years now for BYU as an independent moving forward. So certainly the number of P5 teams on an annual basis is almost double what it used to be in the Mountain West Conference, but it's sometimes those non-P5s that can give you trouble, as we saw last year. You know, BYU losing to Utah State, Central Florida, Nevada, Memphis at the end of the season. So, you know, you really have to beat the teams you're quote-unquote supposed to beat, too.
Greg Rebell, the voice of the Cougars on the Cougar IMG Sports Network, on with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. Greg, you're going to be doing some work with BYU Women's Soccer once again this year. Can you give us a breakdown of the roster right now and how they're looking?
Well, one of the most exciting things about this BYU soccer team this upcoming season is just what a high percentage returns at a number of key spots for BYU. They're losing only 13% of their goals from last year, losing only 16% of their total points from players that scored last year. And so almost all the offensive arsenal returns for Jen Rockwood's club in 2015. That's a very encouraging sign. The fact that Ashley Hatch had been recently invited to play with the U-23 and national team training camp in Florida is another feather in the program's cap. They've got players who are not yet at BYU that have U.S. national team training camp experience at the U-20, U-18 level. And so all these things speak to the caliber of athlete that Jen's been able to recruit for years now at BYU. But relative to 2015, those numbers I gave you earlier show that almost all the firepower is back, including Ashley Hatch, with still 2 years to play. And so good things are on the horizon.
I look at the walk-on tradition that's within the football team, and even the basketball team is having a great walk-on tradition. But how's the walk-on tradition within the women's soccer team? Because I know so many young ladies, especially here in the state, that you know, tremendous soccer players, but don't get that scholarship offer. They might go to an FCS school, a D1AA, or even a smaller D1 school. But you know, is it an option? Have they focused on that walk-on tradition with Jen Rockwood?
I don't break down like I do with basketball or football the walk-on versus scholarship number in women's soccer. My second year with the program is something I'll probably look a little more deeply at. But soccer is one of those programs in which you have X number of scholarships for the team, and how Coach Rockwood divides those scholarships is kind of at the coach's discretion, if someone's getting a full or a half or a third, whatever the case may be. So, you know, that's also an element to it. You know, soccer's not the only sport, but there are sports where it's not every player gets a scholarship, or you know, every you know, say 15 or 20, it's a number that gets divided amongst however many players you've got on the roster that year. And with soccer, it's nothing I've really delved into too much at this point. And again, it's kind of a discretionary thing, and I'm not sure that the coaches are always out there saying this person's a full or this one's a half or otherwise.
Greg, is there a team on this upcoming schedule that you're most excited about
for women's soccer?
Yeah.
Well, the schedule's not officially released yet. It won't be official until the end of the month, maybe beginning of June. But I can say that it's very P5 heavy in the non-conference, and that's something I'm very excited about. That you're going to see a lot of P5 opponents in that non-conference slate. Of course, once you get into league, BYU's trying for a four-peat, which is exciting. But there are some intriguing travel components to the schedule, and again, a very P5 heavy component to the non-conference schedule, and even the one exhibition game they're going to play is against Arizona, which is a P5 program. Now, that game will not count in the standings, but it'll be a great tune-up for both Arizona and for BYU. That'll be their one exhibition game against an outside program. They'll also play a blue-white game in early August as well. So after blue-white and after Arizona, the schedule gets off in earnest. And again, between travel and P5, I think it's an intriguing schedule for fans of BYU women's soccer this year.
Haven't they set records as far as attendance is concerned, in comparison to all the other programs around the nation?
Well, usually you're going to find Portland and BYU among the top five nationally. That's a great WCC tradition that BYU has relative to attendance. And you know, Portland's usually leading the way, and BYU's usually, you know, right there, second or third, certainly in the top five nationally. And since they've expanded South Field, you can look at 2011, 12, 13, and 14 are, of course, the four highest seasons of attendance in BYU soccer history. This past year, they attracted just over 26,000 fans over the home schedule. The high was 2 years earlier, almost 50,000 fans.
Wow.
Over the home schedule. And so it's become a destination for BYU sports fans, and I think it'll be that way again this season.
And we might be so lucky to hopefully get you on our airwaves to broadcast these games, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, stay tuned. Broadcast details to be released here in the weeks to come, and I think that BYU soccer fans will be pleased by what's coming forward.
I'm excited. Just to backtrack back to football, a question that I've had lingering in my mind and I haven't been able to ask you. Bronco Mendenhall mentioned that in 2017, maybe 2018, in 3 years, there will be another realignment within college football. Have you begun to theorize and kind of move some pieces around and within your mind as to what could, or is it useless even to theorize?
Yeah, I think I'm more toward the latter than the former right now. You know, Bronco mentioned that 3-year window. I think there will be some TV rights renegotiated certainly sometime between now and 3 years from now, and that could result in some conferences looking maybe to other conferences in kind of a poaching mentality. That could be the next swing we get. But it's just so tough to theorize about which league will be the one picking from which league and which conference would have most motivation, you know, to expand. And I go back to the old mantra. It's just about who is motivated to do anything at this point. And the rationale and the reasons for movement could vary from league to league. The Big 12 might be considered more in survival mode, while other leagues might be a little more aggressive in their approach. And we'll see if ultimately, you know, the P5 is what the structure is going to be, you know, for the long haul. I just don't know that you can necessarily predict or presume that a Power 5 conference would, you know, suddenly dissolve. But, you know, that super conference, you know, four conference structure was something that's been kind of bounced around for a long time. But it would require somebody taking a bow out. And we already saw, a BCS conference bow out in the Big East, becoming the American and fading away from P5 status. So certainly those kinds of things can happen. But to predict, you know, predict it or project it would be tough to do. And I think at this point, rather than, you know, either, you know, complain or worry too much about what's not happening yet, I think it's best from a BYU standpoint to simply control the things that are happening now. And that is going out and when exposed, be well, play well with that exposure and be positioned as they have been for a long time now, you know, to be that next best option should somebody find a motivation to make a move.
Greg, one last question for you before we let you go. It's about basketball. The Spain trip is coming soon, and only 9 or 10 players are able to go. It's going to be a heated battle, from what I've been hearing. Have you begun to get an indication of as to who maybe those 10 players, 9, 10 players are going to be?
No, I feel pretty good that there's probably 8 locks, and then amongst those other 6 guys, you're going to find a strong battle for those last couple of spots, and that's the way Dave Rose.
Who are those 6 guys, Greg, that you think will be competing
for the last couple of spots?
Yeah, those last 2 spots.
Well, I think we have to first of all take a look at you know the roster and who the eight are that we think are going to have a decent spot at going. Or, you know, quote-unquote locks, if you will. And I think, you know, the guys you think about being, you know, really solid in that spot would be, you know, Kyle Collinsworth, Chase Fisher, Kyle Davis, Nick Emery, Nate Austin, presuming he gets cleared, and I think he will be, Jake Toulson, Corbin Kaufusi, Zach Selyus. To me, those are the eight locks. And then I think you're looking at six other guys. One of them, what I'd almost say is probably had maybe the biggest hurdle to climb right now is Jamal Lates because he hasn't been active, and from a health standpoint, he could be a scratch. So let's just presume for a moment, you know, that Jamal, because of his health situation, ends up being a scratch. Well, now you're talking about five guys: Corey Calvert, Jacob Hartsock, Braden Shaw, Cooper Ainge, Jordan Chapman, and I think Corey's somebody that, because he's got a history with the program and came back early enough from his mission, I think you lean to him as being somebody that looks pretty good. Braden Shaw, I don't know much about, but he'll be a later returner from his mission, as is Jacob Hartsock. Cooper Ainge, I think, is already back and playing with the guys. Now, he's a preferred walk-on, not a scholarship. Will that play into it? Not sure. And Jordan Chapman is someone that, you know, I think from a conditioning and game readiness standpoint, has a lot to prove in these next few weeks as well to Coach Rose and the staff. So I gave you my locks. I gave you the group of guys that might compete. Mm-hmm. Gave you a guy that might be a scratch because of health reasons. And other than that, just a good competition to get yourself overseas.
Always dropping gems on our airways. Greg Wrubell, the voice of the Cougars on the Cougar IMG Sports Network, the professional, the Canuck of the Cougars. Greg, thank you so much for joining us.
Ben, Brian, pleasure as always, and we'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure. Thanks, guys.